Welcome to the Sailor Noob Podcast, where a superfan and a noob talk about the original Sailor Moon episode by episode. I'm your host, Mikan Hana, joined by my co-host.
I'm the co-host and the noob. My name is Caliban. Enchanted Dynamite Body.
What?
I'll tell you in a second.
I have so many questions. But we're a couple of magical people, and we're ready to moon crystal power make up this episode. Sailor Noob is brought to you by Reluctantly Crouch at the Starting Line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rain.
Okay, you know, I can go the whole way.
Cake? Anyone? Okay, just me and Cal? All right,
maybe he's going for speed!
Yeah! Oh, yeah!
All right. I love how, like, he's always... Oh. He's encouraging, but it's real sarcastic. You know, it just reminds me of my parents. But like, okay, yeah!
Right. And we just need to have like some percussion background instruments just going in the background as well.
And a trumpet.
Yeah, right. I don't know if you've seen the music video for that. I watched
it. Yes, he is in a bank or something.
Or yeah, some sort of government building or something.
Yeah. 40s suit.
Yeah.
And at the end he holds his ring up. The camera zooms into his ring.
For some freaking reason.
You asked the right person about that. Yeah, I saw that recently.
I watched it recently, too, because I was like, I don't think I've ever seen this. Because you and I both, like, didn't have MTV in our house for a very long time.
No, there's a lot of videos I haven't seen.
But then there's, like, people in, like, animal costumes, too. Anyways, amazing song. Not the best music video, but...
So sad.
Yeah. Cake. I love you. Anyways, well, yeah.
Yeah.
Cakey.
Cake heals the heart.
Yeah. So today we are talking about episode number 76. Ankoku no Marioku, Esmeraldo no Shinraku in Japanese, Magic of Darkness, Esmerad's Invasion, the English translation, and the English title, Emerald Takes Over.
Emerald takes all. Here she comes.
Yes.
Emerald's taking the town.
Emerald takes the cake.
Bring some of those trumpets back. He's going to walk up and down. Yeah, I was talking about Enchanted. Maybe it should be Emerald Dynamite Body. I was talking about Enchanted Dynamite Body because I was watching... My new addiction is watching otter videos on YouTube.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. But in one of them, the guy was feeding his otter. They're always feeding otters fish. And the otters are so cute that half the fun is seeing them eat because they're like...
And they're just trying to get it down their gullet.
Get it down their 3 feet long throat. Yeah. But at one point, the otter did some kind of pose or something like that. And the subtitles, because it's in Japanese language, were like, Enchanted Dynamite Body. And I'm like, what? Is that a thing I should know about?
No. I don't think that that's something that translates
well. Is this
a
reference to something?
No.
It's just saying he's looking good.
I think maybe like, looking good, striking a pose,
thick and,
of thing.
Yeah.
Like dynamite.
Eating some
dynamite.
Rainbow trout.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've heard both sides of the argument on this. There's people who see an exotic pet and they immediately think, no way, Jose.
Yeah.
Clearly that's bad for the animal. They're not domesticated. They're wild. So on and so forth. And I hear that argument.
Yes.
Also, you know, it's legal in Japan, and it's legal in, I think, 18 states in America as well.
To otters specifically.
For otters, for being pets. Mm-hmm. And otters are very social. You know, if they're raised in captivity, they, A, are used to humans.
Yes.
And, B, can't really go back to the wild.
Not if they're raised in captivity.
Right. So all that's well and good. Like if you have an otter pet, you know, you at home, if you're listening and you have an otter pet, I think it's fine. That's fine. But the way that they get these otters, probably not so great.
Oh, if you looked into it?
Yeah. A lot of them come from Indonesia.
Uh-oh.
And Indonesia, there's a lot of, it's just pet land, I guess. There's a lot of animals in Indonesia that people like as exotic pets.
Okay.
And they have, you know, legislation and rules about how many you can take. And the otters are off that because they're a kind of a new fad pet. And so a lot of people want these otters and they don't have really the same kind of restrictions. Mm. So we don't know for sure, but people think It's probably a lot of otters that are being, you know, taken, poached to be pets for, you know, the thirsty playrooms of Japan.
Oh, my God.
A lot of people looking for enchanted dynamite bodies.
Do you recall one of our earlier episodes? I think it's, I can't remember what they called them now, but what the episode where Dark Kingdom had the rabbit that smelled good.
Yeah, the Chinella.
The Chinella. Yeah. Thank you. We talked about pet stores in Japan, and there are a lot of exotic animals that are for sale in Japanese pet stores, and you hear a lot of similar stories like that. Like, how did they get there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I go down to PetSmart, like, where do they supply or what source their pets from?
I don't know.
Where do they get these cockatiels from? They don't just live outside. Or do they? Like in Florida? Parrots live in Florida.
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, anyway, they're probably from South America.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that too hard.
How do we get out of this hole?
Otters,
you know where they're not?
Otters are cute.
They are. And like I said, like they're all the videos that I've watched, these otters are living in otter heaven. Like they've got
so much
all these toys, and you'd think like, well, they're aquatic. Yeah. They are. They live on land too, but these people have like pools and they give them baths every day and take them to water parks and the beach. And so, I don't know. It seems like a pretty good life for an otter. Here's where they don't have parrots, but they might have otters. I don't know. That's Italy.
Oh yeah.
And we have appeared on the Italy charts now. We're, I don't know the exact number. Right? I know that we're in the top 50 for animation podcasts in Italy. So let me say buonasera to, or buongiorno, depending on when you're listening to this.
Yeah, right.
To our Italian listeners.
All right. I'm trying to think if I know any Italian besides like Italian food.
Which, do you even know that? Because it's like Olive Garden, here's a hint, it's not really Italian.
Well, that's true.
Traditional Italian, American Italian.
Scusi, that's Italian,
right? I don't
know
how much manicotti is being handed out in Italy, but well, anyway, that is way off the beaten path.
Yes.
So we're just saying benvenuto to our Italian listeners.
Yes.
And that's all the language we'll be doing. Back to English. Scurrying back to English for me.
Yes, but this episode has a lot of food in it.
That's true.
So, and we'll get to that later. But for now, how about a breakdown of what is going on?
Can it be broken down?
That is the question.
Can it be broken down?
Yeah.
Molecules can be broken down into atoms, but there are some atoms that weigh much more than your average molecule. You know, their atomic weight, and they cannot be broken down, or they're not stable on their own radioactively.
True.
Because of how big they are.
They're going to explode in
your
face.
So let's say, yes, this is an unstable, this is the Einsteinium of recaps, because there is a lot of stuff to get into this week. Since we're coming back from a break, we're kind of starting a new act, and a lot needs to be explained. The stakes need to be set up here.
It's so dense.
So, yes. And for that reason, we open on Usagi and Chibiusa leaving the house on a sunny day.
Yes.
No wonder Ms. Mihuruna is gone. These kids don't go to school anymore.
Itadakimasu. They say that they're leaving. It's so cute. They do it together. I love it.
Chibiusa is all better now from her illness last episode. And Usagi says, I'll treat you to whatever you want today. Mm-hmm. Chibi throws herself into Usagi's arms and says, thanks. But Usagi wasn't finished. She says, is what I would say, but I've spent all my allowance already. Why don't we play hide and go seek in the park, right? You're a kid. You like that. This does not make Chibi happy. And Usagi's like, yeah, well, I guess you're unhappy. And she starts like walking down the street. Like, it's not clear if she's like trying to escape from this situation. Like, she just laughs like, ha, 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 this is the end of the interaction. Gotta go.
I think she's feeling uncomfortable, but it's like, why?
She's just gonna ditch this kid on the street?
But it's like, Usagi, you created the situation.
Stage right.
I know. You said you would buy her something, and then you're like, oh, but I can't. So don't even offer it.
But before she can go anywhere, she runs into Mamoru coming around the corner. Chibiusa flies into Mamo's arms to Usagi's chagrin. Chibi says, come on, Mamo-chan, let's go somewhere. I need a new notebook and some erasers and, donuts. And Mamo's like, oh, okay, let me check my wallet. Come on, you cheap bastard, you got a motorcycle.
I know.
I know. Maybe dry cleaning for the tuxedo is cleaning him out.
Well, I mean, I think it's good that he doesn't want to spoil her, but yes.
I think it's already happened. Mamoru looks to Usagi, who says, oh, yeah, that's a perfect. That's a great idea. Well, guess I'll be on my way then. Things to do. And then she does bail on Chibiusa. She just leaves.
I know.
Chibi's like, huh, I thought we were all going to go together. More donuts for Chibi. Around the corner, Usagi is fuming. She says, I'm going to let her have this. I'm going to let her have this day with Mamo to cheer her up. And Luna says, yeah, but why don't you go with them and try to make up with Mamoru? And Usagi says, I can't stand Chibi acting like a baby and getting carried around by Mamo. Does she have a baby fetish? Oh, by the way. By the way,
I don't think so.
When you try to Google baby fetish, Chris Hansen has entered the chat.
No, yes.
You know how, like,
yeah.
Not saying I did this, but you know how when, like, Google, like, auto completes your results for you, it gives you a list of things?
Yeah, I don't
Type in baby? Fine, no problem. The further you get into the word fetish, F, baby food, baby formula, baby fox, aw. E, baby fever, baby feet, baby ferrets, aw.
Aw.
T, baby fetus, ew.
Sometimes you want to know, like, what's happening with if you have a baby.
You're on your own. You're on your own now. But have a seat. Anyway, Usagi punches a lamppost in frustration and hurts her hand. In the Goo City, in the future, Prince Demando sits on his throne. And I don't know if we saw this before. Maybe I wasn't paying attention, but it looks like there's a huge lava lamp behind him.
I think that was there. I think that's supposed to be like the energy surging from the black crystal.
Sure.
But it's not super clear. Yeah, I think we get a better look at it this episode.
They got wine, lava lamps, a laser light show. This place is like a Janis Joplin concert. Esmeralda arrives and says, I'm departing for the 20th century. And the prince says, okay, hey, remember how Rubeus died? Like he died in a spaceship explosion.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Very specific. But yeah. Remember his general incompetence?
Uh-huh.
And Esmeralda laughs at this and says, no way that would ever happen to me. Saphir appears and says, I don't know, the sailor warriors in the 20th century are also quite strong. Also.
Uh-huh.
Esmeralda, he says, check out this laser light show, Laser Floyd. Dark Side of the Moon, yeah. And we see this hologram, again, of the Black Moon Clan's invasion of Crystal Tokyo, which I guess is ongoing. It's a siege. It's a siege going on right now. We also see the four future sailor soldiers united around a glowing crystal, protecting it and Crystal Tokyo.
Yes.
And Zephyr says, these are the 30th century sailor soldiers that even my brother is having difficulty with. What? What?
What do you need?
This was never in the cards. We flipped a whole new card here.
Okay.
The 30th century?
Okay. I didn't realize this was not new information. Yes.
This is like John Connor went back like 20 years.
It's a lot of years.
He goes on, if Rubeus had taken the crystal points in the past, they wouldn't have this power. And all through this, Demando has been silent. But now he says, Saphir, you're annoying. And his eyes flash, literally. And the image disappears. And Saphir says, oh, Nissan. Okay, so he's the brother.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
This was never made clear before.
Oh, he called him Onisan before.
Like, I wasn't listening.
Okay, so yeah.
the subtitles literally said Nissan.
Yeah.
While he said Nissan.
Okay, so Demando is Saphir's older brother.
Yeah, Nissan.
Yeah.
Hard to get service for, no. Esmeralda said, well, Rubeus was an idiot. I should mention that they've all said this, basically, like they crap on Rubeus all through this scene. She says, if we're going to the past, we should send all the dark power of the evil black crystal there and inundate the past with power. Good word, kids. Inundate.
Yeah.
To overwhelm or flood.
Yes.
Demando says, we can't send that much power with our current system. So they need an upgrade. Who's your power guy? I didn't know the Black Moon Clan lived in Texas.
Oh.
JK.
Oh, okay.
Love you, Texas listeners.
Yeah, right.
Stay cool. Demando says, we need a bigger dark gate. And Esme says, yep, now watch this. And she activates the hologram machine. Everybody's using the slide projector today.
Uh-huh.
We see the world of Tokyo, 1990X. And she says, in the primitive 20th century, there are still negative points that hold negative power. They're called Buffalo Wild Wings. Just kidding. We see a weird crystal-looking thing in an alley, and it's radiating dark, if that's possible.
Yeah.
The crystal is a small effigy of Esmeralda.
Oh my God,
I know. If it was an actual piece of Sailor Moon merch, I'd already have one. As she talks, the image of the crystal gets bigger and bigger as it absorbs this energy until it towers over the city. She says, we can transmit our dark power to them. And we see five total giant Esmes forming this pentacle across the city. She says, if we transmit all of the evil dark crystal's power at once, we can cover the earth in darkness.
Yes.
The statues light up and Tokyo like becomes a crater. Like that's the end of Tokyo.
I know.
And we see Earth from space as the darkness envelops the entire planet. Uh-huh. So stakes set.
Yes.
She says, I've already asked Saphir to manufacture these dark henges.
Yes.
Saphir gestures and a mote of light approaches Esme and transforms into one of the small effigies we saw in the hologram. Mm-hmm. And Saphir says, I made them like you asked, but it's in poor taste.
He can't help himself. He has to say something.
I'll make more later.
Uh-huh.
Don't fail like that Cretan Rubaeus. Again, this whole scene they're dunking on Rubaeus. I'm cutting it for time and out of respect for the dead. Esme says, I'll succeed in return. After all, I couldn't be away long from the person I adore. Indicating, I think, Demando.
Yes.
Who kind of like turns his head at this and his eyes flash figuratively. And he seems kind of annoyed. Uh-huh. He says, Yeah, do the thing. Uh-huh. And Esme laughs riotously.
Yes.
Meanwhile, in Tokyo, the Maxi 5 homemade cake store is opening, and they've got all-you-can-eat cakes. Uh-huh. We see many girls admiring the delicious-looking desserts, including our girls, Rei, Minako, Makoto, and Ami. I guess Rei found out about this. She had the Groupon. Because Mina says, oh, you're so bad, and like smacks her on the back really hard.
I know.
It's weird. Ami says, cakes have a lot of calories and not many vitamins. What does this girl eat for study fuel?
Sandwiches.
Isn't she studying a lot?
Just sandwiches.
Bumps
all.
On a log.
Yeah, right.
An apple makes a healthy snack.
Yeah.
Mako's
mom
like,
is a doctor. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Mako's like, yeah, we get it.
We know.
And Mina says, cakes replenish our hearts. And that's why she's the best soldier. I'm not taking any questions at this time.
I freaking love it.
Although Artemis says, you're going to gain weight. And she closes the door on the basket she has him in.
I know.
Yeah, good. Ami says we should invite Chibi and Usagi, which Rei tried to do, but they were out. And Mako says, it's all you can eat cake. They're probably in there right now.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. Artemis, we cut back to him and he's like, you just go and get fat.
I know.
Lay off, man. These girls deserve this.
Why are these cats obsessed with them, like, not getting fat?
And well, they are kind of like their personal trainers, but they never make them, like, do any, like,
actual
practice
training
or working out. Yeah.
Yeah, except for that one episode where the Senshi pretended to be fighting against
Sailor Moon.
Yeah, that's
actually
the
got
only
a little
time.
Work in.
Yeah.
Up the street comes Esmeralda. She is in an actually black mini dress.
Yes.
With a short carnelian jacket. With a
carnelian, ooh.
Look it up. With a bronze-colored, double-wrapped, studded belt, a gold-leaf necklace, and mirrored aviators, and the people on the street are losing their minds looking at her.
Yeah.
She already owns this town.
Yeah.
Men want her. Women want to be her.
That's true.
Cats, we don't know. She thinks, so this is the 20th century. How primitive. She takes off one of her dark crystal earrings, and she does this thing with it where it like kind of like grows a string or something. It's like a plumb line, if you know what that is. And she says, the savage energy has its own charms. And I have no idea what that means, but keep talking, baby.
It reminds me of like a crystal pendulum. Like,
yeah.
You know, like a
what?
I'm
a little too scientific for that, I think.
Okay, maybe this is kind of new age.
Like in Sedona?
Well, like you have like a crystal that's like on the end of a chain.
Oh.
And you have it on your hand and like you can ask it a question and supposedly it's going to indicate that it goes like in a circle stuff like that.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right.
A little new agey.
All right.
That's how I grew up.
Guess she's a 9. The earring kind of leans towards the cake store and she thinks, that's the negative energy point.
Mm-hmm.
At this moment, Usagi arrives at the cake store and she's pressed up against the glass so hard she's crushing Luna. She says, I don't care. I'm going on a binge. I'm going to eat them all.
I know.
I hope this store has barf insurance.
Oh, no.
I just invented barf insurance.
That's disgusting.
Inside the store, which is also a dining room, All the girls are enjoying cakes and confectionaries. There's a dessert bar or two in operation. Everybody's stuffing themselves. Mina says, "We endured all those tough fights for this day." Whatever gets you through what you do, kid.
I know.
We need you out there. We pan to Mina's basket, and we see inside that Artemis is still locked up. And he says, "Girls are cold. They forgot about me." Give the guy a cake.
Yeah.
And then tease him about getting fat. Mako's ready for another one, but when she looks at the bar, she sees Usagi just two-handing cakes into her maw.
I know!
And right next to her is Esmeralda, who's doing the same thing.
I know!
Esme has cake all over her face, and she's like, "Why are these so good? I guess they're better than your cake pills in the future, huh?" Primitive is okay sometimes. Usagi has stars in her eyes and chocolate all over her face as she says, "I'm gonna eat all the cakes on Earth!" Everyone is scandalized. Luna lets Artie out of his basket, and he's like, "Where is everybody?" But Luna says, "Not my problem." Because at the bar, Mako and Rei are trying to wrestle Usagi away from the cakes. It's like you see when you have like a video where a cat grabs onto a fish or something, and you're trying to pull the cat off the fish, like, "Let go of the fish!" He's not going. Usagi says, "Let me go! I don't care anymore!" And she shoves Rei and Mako back. Mako runs into Esme, who drops her cakes and pauses, and she goes right back in. But she sees the other girls at the store watching her with disdain. Mm-hmm. "They thought you were so cool."
They did.
"Now you have frosting all over your designer jacket." They're saying things like, "Oh, she's eating like a pig. Oh, where's her shame? It's disgusting."
Yes.
And she flips her fan open and she walks off like, "Ha ha ha." She heads for the back, I don't know, for the bathroom maybe. And she says, "How could I act like that? They look so good, I couldn't help it. I can't let 20th century brats look down upon me. That's it, just you wait. They'll be the first I sacrifice to the Dark Henge."
Yes.
She waves her fan over herself and changes back into her customary outfit, her future clothes. Yes. And she laughs uproariously. Back in the dining area, the uproar has subsided. Ami's on board now. She says that, yeah, cake is food for the heart. And Mako says, "Yeah, and Usagi needs heart cake." We cut to Usagi, and she's still stuffing herself. But she's like, "Listen, listen, Mama and Chibi in his arms." And she grabs Mina by the face, and I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a Three Stooges bit. She's like rubbing her hands all over her face. She's like, "Ah, Mamo."
It's like almost like she's like trying to stretch Mina's cheeks. And Mina's like, "Oh my God, you're hurting me. Stop."
In the kitchen of Maxi 5, we see that the staff has been knocked out by Esme, and she once again uses her earring to douse the negative point.
Yes.
She finds it. She summons her Dark Henge effigy and places it. In the future, dark power flows out of the lava lamp. Bad vibes, man. And into the past. This henge is right in the middle of the floor, so nobody trip over it, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Put some cones around it. From the energy, Esme summons her droid, which is called Marzipan.
Yes.
And we'll just talk about her later, won't we?
Yes, we will.
Esme says the henge needs to charge up Marzipan, so take care of the girls outside. With a screamed, "Marzipan!"
Yeah.
Marzipan. Marzipan. What? We're strong bad. I'm strong bad.
Yes, yes, you're right. You're right. I completely forgot that her name was Marzipan.
We have to explain to people who strong bad is.
Homestar.
Look
Runner
it up. Just look it up.
And strong.
They're
bad.
All on YouTube.
Amazing.
The droid turns into a service worker.
Yeah.
I mean, like a jumpsuit. I mean, like a, I don't want to say waitress. You know, like a server.
She's a server. She's wearing the
but
same.
But she's in like the little cute outfit type.
The
thing.
Same outfits that the other servers who are knocked out were wearing.
Yeah, the knocked out ones.
Yeah.
And Esme says, "I've got work to do as well." And she waves her fan over the cakes as pink glitter falls on them. That seems bad.
It seems really
unless
bad.
You're a cake maker. Maybe there's pink glitter on your cakes. I don't know. Back at the girls' table, Usagi is feeling better, or is she feeling badder? Okay. Chibi and Mamoru show up, and she's like, Chibi's like, "Wow, that's a lot of clean plates."
I know.
And Usagi's like, "It's your fault." Bleh, bleh, bleh. Mamoru starts to back off like, "I could be free of all of this."
I know.
But he sees something strange. Two girls are eating cake and they suddenly become frozen?
Yes.
I think. Or maybe it's like frosting, maybe.
I think it's like
they get frosted.
They're frozen by frosting.
It's literal frosting.
Yes.
Are they doing a thing?
I think you're right.
I can smell a pun from a mile away.
I think that's what they're doing.
And some kind of pun version of that statement. It starts happening to all the girls, and Marzipan in disguise comes out with a tray of more cakes. Mm-hmm. Must be a crappy disguise, though, because Mamoru is immediately like, wait! And he just throws a platter at her like he's going to cut her head off.
I know.
Just some lady just working a 9-to-5 job. But not, because she ducks and she just turns back into her real form. So, great disguise.
I know.
And they square up. In another part of the room, oblivious to this, Chibi and Usagi are arguing over a piece of cake. But Mamoru yells, don't eat it, Usako! And she's like, he called me Usako!
I know.
So, Chibi eats the cake. Nothing comes from this.
Nothing happens to her, which must have been good.
A non-treated piece of cake.
I guess.
And Rei and Amy are like, no. Marzipan transforms her arms into pastry bags, and she starts firing frosting everywhere.
Yeah.
And some hits a potted plant near Usagi, and it turns into a giant ice cream cone.
Uh-huh.
Like she would see if she was on a desert island and hadn't had food for 10 minutes.
Yes!
Mamoru says, girls, get that baby out of here. I'll handle this.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as the girls are outside, the girls say, can't! Get that baby out of here.
I know.
And they all transform. And we really front-loaded a lot of the action in this episode because they essentially all get a full transform scene. Like, it takes like 3.5 minutes.
It does take a while.
They run out of song.
Yeah.
Inside, Mamoru is on the run from Marzipan, but the sailor soldiers appear, saying, upon our youthful sailor outfits, we entrust our hearts to defeat evil. You are breaking innocent girls' dreams and trampling on our momentary happiness.
Yes.
Skinny Kawate Oshiyoko.
Mm-hmm.
Marzipan starts shooting again, but Rei starts a burning mandala up. But Marzipan freezes both her and Sailor Moon in place.
Mm-hmm.
Usagi's saying, it's sweet. Oh, it's so sweet. Jupiter tosses a sparkling wide pressure without even calling it out. This is how little low on time we are. She just suddenly throws a lightning ball at her. But the droid blocks it with a barrage of fired cakes and entraps her with giant donuts.
I know.
And just as if that wasn't enough, I can believe giant donuts would entrap you.
Sure.
Ami says, be careful. Everyone who is hit by the blast becomes fragile like sugar candy.
I don't know how she knows
this. How does
she
know that?
Yeah, that's one thing I was like, that's great information, but where did it come from?
Cakes are food for the heart, but frosting is like, death for the body.
It's not like anybody who was frozen got accidentally touched and like disintegrated
before
their
eyes. No, this was not a children's show. Like,
that's
one,
what would happen.
One random girl would tip over. Maybe she was like a jerk to Usagi at the buffet. She would like tip over and shatter and be like, whoa, the stakes are up.
Yeah.
Marzipan fires again, but Venus fires her own love me chain. Marzipan flips out of the way, and fires her cakes, trapping Venus in a giant shortcake.
Mm-hmm.
Marzipan begins blasting Mars and Moon over and over, completely covering them in frosting. And the coup de grace, she throws a rose cake topping that will surely shatter them to bits.
Mm-hmm.
But it is shattered in midair by a real rose, which sinks into the tile of the cake store. Yes. Tuxedo Mask is here!
Yeah.
On the second floor, you didn't know the store had. There's a balcony. He says, sweets are works of art, nurtured by the dreams of young girls. Even the sweetest hearts of these girls who adore beauty will melt. And Usagi says, what?
I know!
He continues, sweet sugar candies can melt away their heartaches, but even those sugar candies sometimes melt. TMN, you've lost the plot, man. I don't know where you are. But Ami says, oh, I get it. He's telling us what she's made of. Shine Aqua Illusion. And Mercury blasts the droid with water and she begins to break down and the Senshi are free. Now, Sailor Moon.
Yes.
She delivers an MPH and the droid is defeated. In the back room, the dark henge shatters and the staff returns to consciousness. Esmeralda looks through the back room door to see that all is well in the dining room.
Mm-hmm.
She hears a voice from behind say, a lady should never peep. What?
I know.
And she turns around to see Tuxedo Mask and the Sailor Scouts. She says, as tango music plays,
yeah.
Oh my, you're handsome. And he like, just sort of like slinks out of frame. He kind of just like goes,
I don't want any piece of that.
But Sailor Moon says, hey, over here. Esme says, you're the sailors I've heard so much about. You're flat-chested kids with no hips. Usagi's like, flat-chested? And Jupiter's like, hello, old lady, custom bra? Esme's like, old lady,
I know.
All right, listen up, brats. I'm a top leader of the Black Moon, a clan of the Dark Moon. All the men in the world bow down to me, the most beautiful, powerful woman, Esmeralda. And as she goes on, all the girls slump over like, come on already.
I know.
We want to kick your ass. But Esme laughs explosively, and all the girls are like, ah, she laughs really loud. It's loud. She says, I will defeat you, and she jumps away into space somehow.
I know.
Into the space that you didn't know that this place had.
Right.
And that's it.
She phases out of the ceiling and flies away.
The end.
I know.
That's all we have time for.
Whew. It's a very overstuffed episode, I feel like. There's a lot happening.
It is. We should probably just maybe hit the things we want to talk about real fast so we can just get on to the next part of the show. But blown away. No idea it took place 1,000 years in the future. I mean, millennium, maybe when it might have tipped me off to that if they're going to reuse the idea of it being a millennium, right? It's 1,000 years.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
You didn't think of that being a possibility. Okay.
That's a long way in the future.
It's a long way in the future. It's very far in the future.
So many more questions now. Okay. A lot of villain stuff in this episode.
Yes.
That's really good. It's good to get to know these guys. It's weird that there was villain scheming and talking with the Ayakashi sisters, but we really got to know them when they ran up against the Sailor Scouts.
Yes.
And definitely in their last episodes apiece.
Yes.
So it's nice to see them just talking about their plans. And we got this with, as soon as Jedi was gone, then suddenly we switched to like Beryl talking to Battalia and talking to the remaining kings and kind of explaining their plan and stuff like that. And so we're kind of getting that now. And I like that.
I like that too. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of, we've talked about Rubius kind of being like Jedi.
I think I'd give the edge to Jedi on that one.
Oh, okay. Wow. We're really down on Rubius. But like, you know, like the next person coming in.
A man has died.
I know. The next person coming in and being like, well, their plans were stupid. My plans are different and better. Like, Nefrite was like that, too.
Oh, no, we've heard that from everybody.
Yeah, and Nefrite is like, this is my plan, and he's, like, reading the stars.
If a bad guy ever comes in like, I hope I can do it, I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
Watch out for that person.
Yeah, right. But I think we got some backstory on with, like, Zoisite, too. We really got, like, Zoisite and, like, Nefrite, like, being at each other's throats, and that was really fun.
Yeah. I think the show... It's hard, always proves to be in the right place. It always lands, I think, on its feet in terms of these issues and topics like, oh, you're going to get fat if you eat cake or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it tells you how far we've come in children's entertainment that you don't see this much anymore. Like, you wouldn't see this.
Probably not.
On another cartoon now. They wouldn't even bother with this.
No.
Or even like in like, I mean, I don't watch like Tim Allen sitcoms. Like, I guess I don't know what's going on in the vast wasteland of TV, but you wouldn't even, the message is ultimately positive, like way back in, you know, the first single digits episodes when they go to the gym or whatever.
Right.
They learn that who cares, right?
Which was one of the episodes that was cut from the original.
Right, yeah. But the fact that they would bring it back now is, I don't know why they're trying to heel turn Artie.
Yeah, I mean, and the cats are always the ones who are like, you're going to get fat or don't get fat or something like that. So I don't really like that part of it. But I guess I guess it's better than having one of the girls fixate.
Oh, no, that wouldn't happen.
But I think what the episode is ultimately trying to say is too much sugar is bad for you, but you can have a little bit. That's fine.
Yeah, well, that's true. Like, we don't talk about the effects of – these are cartoon characters.
Right.
And so Usagi can eat conservatively 378 pieces of cake and, you know, it's fine.
Right. I mean, you think about, like the idea of, like, you are what you eat or whatever. Here is a bad guy who is literally shooting sweets at you or you turn inanimate objects turn into sweets.
Yeah.
And like, then you become brittle like sugar and, like, somebody touches you, you're going to disintegrate.
At least there was a non-zero chance of this, but at least they didn't have, like, Usagi, like, eat their way out of this, you know?
Oh, my God. Like, a gingerbread house sort of situation sort of thing, like Hansel and Gretel. Yeah.
Come on, Usagi. Gotta get us out of here.
Oh, my God.
And she squares off against the droid. The droid's like, I got the power of sugar. You can never defeat me. And Usagi's like, the droid's like, why are you looking at me like that? We just cut to like Usagi next to a burned out jewel.
Chocolate all over her mouth. Just like, I never want to see another suite again. Like, and Tuxedo Mask comes like kind of late. Like, what happened?
Chubby's in the corner puking her guts out.
She's like, I don't want to talk about it. I'm so traumatized. I did want to talk a little bit about Esmeralda's Dark Henge, Daku Henji in Japanese, which are the statues that look like her. So she's attempting to create the dark gate by putting them at negative points, and then dark power helps create the gate. And it's just, it's such a ridiculous pose of her, like, naked with her fan. Like, she's, like, dancing almost. But I also thought, like, Dark Henge, I didn't get that at first, but it's as in, maybe you got this, it says as in henge as a prehistoric monument consisting of a circle or stone or wooden uprights, like Stonehenge, for example. That's where that word comes from, and I just didn't even, like, I was like, henge? What the heck is a henge?
What I'll need to know is, I'll be doing Stonehenge tonight.
I mean, if the statues didn't grow at all, it would be exactly like that.
No, I said 12 feet.
Yes.
No, it says 12 inches.
Saphir, come on.
Look, I followed the plan.
You made it look like me, but it's tiny. Not what I wanted.
How would you describe Just Enough Trope?
We are the Just Enough Trope podcast. I'm your host, Caliban, joined as always by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Mikan Hana.
Oh no, does this mean they can hear all the things I yell at the TV during Downton Abbey?
Why did you do that?
How do you plead?
Let the game begin.
Yeah, check these fresh moves.
Oh! Don't shoot man in face.
This isn't the Save Gotham fundraiser.
It's the Chill Family Reunion.
Master Yoda assigned a Padawan to this bold Jedi.
I think it's pronounced Padawan.
Oh, Padawan, excuse me.
Hey, it's getting late. I think Ralph's going to want his motorcycle back.
Come check out the pictures of Jean Grey.
I am freaking getting old.
Yeah, I noticed the life clock was blinking in your hand.
Get out of here, Wilson. Go fight the Teen Titans or something.
I'm unkillable, not unwoundable.
You like Sailor Moon, right? Why don't you sail on his
Wow.
Just Enough Trope. News, reviews, and geek fondue. Every Monday on the Just Enough Trope Podcast Network.
Loving me never have a say, you sorry sorry.
What? For Kyoro Kyoro Miru or Curiously Looking Around, where we talk about elements of Japanese culture within the episode, I thought we would talk about table manners or dining etiquette in Japan.
Perfect.
Yes. So in this episode, we see Usagi and Esmeralda both demonstrate what bad table manners are at an all-you-can-eat buffet in Japan. Yes, it's all-you-can-eat, but that does not mean that the table manners should go right out the window. Let's start with what you say before and after you eat a meal in Japan. I think this is really important to cover. So in Japan, it is customary to say itadakimasu, literally I humbly receive, before starting to eat a meal. Itadakimasu serves as an expression of gratitude for all who played a role in providing the food, including the cooks, whether you're at a restaurant or it's made by somebody in your family or a friend, the farmers, the animals and plants that you're eating.
Whoa.
Etc.
Everybody's covered.
Everybody's covered. So saying itadakimasu before a meal has been described as both a secular and a religious practice. I actually think it's more secular because I don't necessarily think it has a very
What's wrong with being secular?
Yeah, right.
So many Spinal Tap jokes we can get.
You'll come up with a third one. Yeah, yeah, you will. But it is a very Japanese thing to do, and it is one of the first words that I learned when I first visited when I was in high school. And I think that we had a couple of words that it was recommended for us to learn before we went to Japan, and I believe this is one of them, but I really got it when I was with my host family. Yeah. It was a big deal. You know, most people, I would say the vast majority of Japanese people do continue to say this before their meal. This is more of a cultural tradition, I would say, these days than a religious one. When While Bon Appetit wishes the receiver to have a good meal, Itadakimasu also gives gratitude and respect for everyone and everything that helped your meal become your meal. So Itadakimasu does have its roots in traditional Japanese Buddhism. So the kanji that from Itadaku, it means like mountaintop, and the original meaning is to quote, put something over the head, or quote, to wear on one's head. Kind of, it's playing up on like the upwardness and the mountain kind of image.
Okay.
So when Buddhism came to Japan, it came with like a bringing a raising up action, like you're being thankful to the gods, or you're being thankful to somebody who is above you in rank somehow, whether they're like an elder or somebody who has a higher position than you in society.
Literally. Right.
So Itadaku basically became a word meaning to raise above your head. It started to be used as a humble form of to receive. Mm. So it can be used in other situations besides eating, but it is mostly used before you eat in a meal.
What other kind of situations?
Like when you are physically receiving an object from somebody. Oh. Somebody's like, would you like a baseball? Yeah, yes, I will take the baseball. Like I will take that from you. But it's very common for you have to be careful because you can't use it in every single situation, and it's more like for like physical things. It's not like you can't ask somebody like, you know, you can't say would you like something that's, I don't even know, like something that's not physical, and like, oh yes, I will receive that.
Physical things only. Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
What okay. about when your waitress says, enjoy your meal, and you say, you too. Can it be used for that?
we'll get to that, I guess. It is most common to put both your hands together in front of your chest when you say itadakimasu. However, some people have their hands on their laps, which is typically considered to be more casual. Another customary and important etiquette phrase to say is gochisousama deshita. Literally, it was a feast. To the host after the meal and the restaurant staff when you leave a restaurant.
Okay.
So, I looked into it, and I thought this was actually rather interesting, just like the breakdown of what that phrase means. This is another phrase that I learned, and I really remember this was harder for me to learn than itadakimasu. I feel like itadakimasu kind of rolls off the tongue after you say it a couple times.
Sure.
And it's, I don't know what it is. It's fun to say, and I feel like I smile every time I say it. I don't know why. But gochisousama deshita is a little bit more complicated. And I remember my host family just like doing it with me over and over and over again, because it's one of those things. It's like, it's so important to know how to say it.
Yeah.
So chizo means, quote, to run around, or to, quote, make every effort for the guest. And this comes from a time before we had refrigerators, and when it was common to run all over town, if not further, maybe on horseback, you have to go a couple towns over to collect ingredients to put a meal together.
Sure. Faster horse.
Yeah, right. Because
Rocky Road is going to melt.
I know. And go adds a formalness to the term, and it is utilized for more respect. So gochiso means a luxurious meal or feast. And sama is like the suffix that the same respectful suffix that we know that is commonly added to somebody's somebody's name.
Right.
So adding sama to this phrase illustrates respect and thanks to the person or persons who prepared the meal. Mm-hmm. So you can say gochisousama, but adding the deshita is more polite, and it is what I would recommend. Deshita is the past tense of des, which is the verb that means to be or it is. It's one of the first words you learn in the Japanese language when you're learning it as well.
Sure.
So something that I learned while doing this research that I somehow did not pick up while I was in Japan, is it is actually a good idea and polite to say gochisousama deshita when you are out eating at a restaurant, even if you are alone. So you can say Gochisousama deshita to you, to your server or the cashier as you pay your bill. If there is an open kitchen at the restaurant, maybe you're at a fancy sushi bar. You can say it casually to the cooks as you're leaving.
Why are you leaving through the kitchen?
Well, no, like as you're passing, as you're passing the open kitchen.
Hey, get out of here.
I just wanted to say thank you so much.
This is so good. Shaking all their hands.
I know, right? And you can also say it right before you leave one more time to express your thanks. Though not exclusively Japanese, it is important that no one starts to eat before everyone in the family or group is seated at the table and everyone is ready to eat. No one should take a bite before the highest ranked person at the table does. This could be the person who is the head of the household, the oldest person, or your boss if you're out to eat with
work. Or if you have a family business, it's all three.
Yeah, right. That, yeah, exactly. Grandpa is the boss, so we got to wait for him. So it is considered impolite to not finish every single grain of rice in Japan. Young children are often told, quote, every grain of rice has seven fortune gods. Even as a foreign high schooler, that's me, one of my host families told me the saying. I remembered it for some reason as three gods, but same thing. So if you leave three grains of rice, according, you know, the seven gods, that's 21 gods that you are disrespecting.
I already got 50,000 gods in my belly. Come on.
This again is going back to paying respect to the farmers who worked hard to grow and harvest your rice. It reminds me of like what we were told as kids, like you better clean your plate or there are starving children in Africa. Yeah, well, that's what it should be now.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It is considered good manners to lift your rice or small soup bowls to the mouth so one does not spill food. With miso soup, for example, you eat the solid food like tofu and the seaweed, the nori, with chopsticks and drink the broth directly from the bowl. Larger bowls of soup, such as ramen, typically are served with a large plastic spoon called a chirenge. Of course, so those bowls you do not pick up. They are massive. You're not, and that's impolite. So small soup bowls. You pick up, drink the broth.
It's impolite to pour ramen down your shirt.
Yeah, like larger ramen bowls, you use the spoon to eat the broth.
Right.
So I don't think that people would try to do that, but...
Well, it's like some American restaurants, you know, they just, it's the Wild West. Like you'll get a little bowl of miso soup and they give you the big spoons still and it's, you know.
I mean, you could use that. That's fine. I mean, that's more American than Japanese.
Yeah.
To use the spoon on the miso soup bowl. But right, yes. Yeah, exactly.
Which is like, it's got me all messed up. I'm using a lobster claw cracker on my club sandwich.
Well, I think maybe it's a weird thing in America for us to like lift our bowls up to eat it, but it's like it became like comfortable when
yeah,
I was in
well,
Japan.
Yeah, well, here's the divide, right? Here's the fulcrum. Slurping.
Well, yeah, we're going to
slurping here?
Mm-hmm.
No go.
Yeah.
Slurping there?
Yes.
Number 1.
Yes, and I was actually just going to talk about that. Of course, chopsticks or hashi in Japanese are always provided. Noodles from hot soup are often blown on once lifted up from the soup to cool before eating. And of course, it is, like you were saying, appropriate to slurp certain foods. It's appropriate to slurp certain foods, especially ramen or soba noodles.
What about this move where you pick up your utensil, like your fork or your knife, and you lick the back side, then you flip it around.
No.
And you lick the front side.
No.
You get them both.
No, don't lick.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. Don't lick your chopsticks. Don't suck on your chopsticks. I saw that. That is inappropriate.
Stick them behind your ear when you're not using them.
No, don't do that either.
Okay. All right.
And it should also mention that slurping is not practiced universally and Western.
Oh, no.
Well, let me finish. Western style noodles or pasta. Should not be slurped.
Oh.
So your ramen,
oh,
like basically,
linguine is divine.
Yeah, don't do that. Like basically, if it's in soup, you can slurp it. So
just the American traveler's beads of sweat coming down is like, are these slurping noodles or not?
Slurping noodles or not slurping noodles?
I should have brought the guide.
So there's actually this really cool thing in Japan that not every restaurant has, but I really liked it. A lot of sit-down restaurants, there's a little box and there's a button, and you push the button and your server comes over. So you need something, you need water, you know, you need the check. They come over. I really liked it.
Yeah.
And I think that most Japanese people are pretty polite and they're not going to over abuse it.
Well, so, yeah, that's maybe baked that's, into the culture. Yeah. Here, I don't know.
Yeah. I think it would be okay.
There's a lot of Karens and male Karens, and we really need to come up with what the male Karen name is, because I honestly think there's more male Karens than there are female Karens.
Oh, okay. Carl? I don't know.
No, I came to this lobster steakhouse. I did not expect that. That just stabbing that button over and over.
I know. Sushi etiquette dictates that when eating nigiri sushi, which is the type of sushi with the large piece of fish on top of the sushi rice and no nori, one dips the topping side of the sushi piece into the soy sauce, which protects the rice from soaking up too much sauce.
That's completely opposite to how Americans do it.
Yeah.
They're like, get that soy sauce up in that rice.
Yeah, I know. Well... leaving stray grains of rice floating in the sauce is considered uncouth, but can be difficult to avoid. It's also uncouth to mix wasabi into the soy sauce dish. Instead, you should put a dab of wasabi on the sushi piece after it has been dipped. However, you will find that a lot of restaurants in Japan that serve sushi add wasabi prior to serving it to you, unlike everything.
To the pieces of fish.
Yes.
Oh.
To the rolls, you will to the be pieces enjoying of this. Fish. Okay. Yes. Huh. So I personally do not like wasabi. And I learned about this the hard way when I went to Japan in college. I ordered a roll of kapamaki shortly after arriving in Japan. And kapamaki is the sushi roll that is just cucumber. And if you remember when we talked about kappa, which is the yokai, they love cucumber. So anyways, yes. Yes. That's why it's called kapamaki.
Kapamaki.
Yeah.
Tarai.
Yeah, right. I got such a surprise with that first bite. Just a mouthful of wasabi, but I did not want to be rude. I was so fixated on that. So I forced myself to eat the rest, even though I was coughing and my eyes were watering, my face was red. I learned really fast to say wasabi nuki kudasai, which means without wasabi, please. I am not kidding.
And they were really impressed. And the sushi chef came out afterwards and he kneeled down and gave you a bandana and he's like, bowed deeply.
That would have been amazing.
I want to know,
did not happen.
Is it okay to take two pieces of nigiri and put a piece of sashimi between them and then make a daburu down?
No!
And then just put the whole thing in your mouth like that?
I think that they would look at you like you had three eyes. I mean, what is this rude American?
That same guy is looking at me, just shaking his head. Pan goes
to the belt. You don't enjoy what I made for you?
Yeah. No, swords at home, but still.
So pouring soy sauce over white rice is not a Japanese custom, nor is it polite to
pour. They like that rice.
Yes. Nor is it polite to pour soy sauce directly over sashimi or sushi. Soy sauce is a condiment meant to be utilized with discretion, just enough to enhance, but not overwhelm the flavor of the food to which it is added. At each diner's seat, and we have this at a lot of sushi restaurants here too, a small dish is provided for holding the soy sauce and dipping the food.
Mm.
So to pour an excessive amount of soy sauce into the dish is considered greedy and wasteful, which brings to mind the Japanese term motanai, which conveys a sense of regret over waste.
Waste not one.
The exclamation motanai can translate as what a waste. Instead, it is considered polite to pour a little soy sauce and then add more as needed, which, I mean, makes sense. Before eating, most restaurants provide either a hot or cold towel, or which can be plastic wrapped and a wet napkin. So both are called oshibori. This is for cleaning your hands before eating and not after. And it is only for cleaning your hands. It is rude to use them to wash your face or any part of the body other than the hands. Though apparently some Japanese men use their oshibori to wipe their faces and less formal places. I don't know why it's okay for men to do this and not for women, but that's what I found.
It's uncouth.
Yeah. Except
it's hot, though.
It is hot.
So it would only be if you were dirty or if, I guess, it was cold outside and you're like, oh, it's a little warm up my face.
I think you should probably just excuse yourself and go to the bathroom.
Just dunk your head in the toilet. Yeah.
Yeah. You should accept oshibori with both hands when handed the towel by a server. When finished, fold or roll up the oshibori and place it on the table. It is also impolite to use oshibori towels to wipe any spills on the table. I'm not sure I might have done this.
You don't work there.
I know. But like, you don't want to like, oh, I spilled something. Oops. But you know, you freaking wiped your hands with it.
Yeah,
so,
that's true.
Anyways. And now we finally go to the chopsticks, which probably have the longest list of do's and don'ts for Japanese table manners. And again, chopsticks in Japanese are hashi. Many Japanese restaurants provide diners with single-use wooden chopsticks that must be snapped apart near the tops, which are thicker than the bottoms. The attachment area may produce small splinters. However, and I No, I'm guilty of this. Never rub chopsticks against each other to remove splinters. This is considered extremely rude, implying that one thinks the utensils are cheap.
Guess what, buddy?
Yeah.
They came off a truck with about a billion other ones.
I know.
They are cheap.
I know. So, but I guess you're not supposed to do that.
Huh.
So don't do it in Japan. I guess you can do it in the privacy of your own home. Yeah.
Or at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah, right. At the beginning of the meal, use the smooth bottom ends to pick up food from serving dishes if no other utensils have been provided for serving. So this is if you haven't used your chopsticks yet.
Mm-hmm.
Then eat holding the food between the bottoms of the hashi, obviously. If you later want to use your hashi to take more food from the serving dishes, you should use the top ends to do so in order to avoid contaminating the food on the tray.
Yes. But your fingers have been all over those the whole time.
But it's better than your mouth.
That's true.
So at the end of the meal, it is good manners to return single-use chopsticks partway into their original paper wrapper.
Hmm.
This covers the soiled sticks while indicating that the package has been used, which I think it is smart, and I will definitely try to remember to do that next time I have the opportunity, but I don't think I've done that before.
No, because your paper is folded into a little standing
thing. Yeah, and I was actually going to get to that. I will get to that in a second. Do not pass food with chopsticks directly to somebody else's chopsticks.
What about into their mouth?
No.
Okay.
Don't do that either.
Hey, look, didn't need to clarify.
Yeah, no. But passing from chopsticks to chopsticks, this is a technique which is called hiroibashi. It is only used at funerals.
Oh.
Where this is a little morbid maybe in some ways, but where the bones of the cremated body of the dead person are passed from person to person in this manner.
Whoa.
Yeah. When passing, so... take a minute to process. I've read that before.
We're relying a lot on the skill of the chopstick holders,
yes.
Aren't we?
Yes.
Is this? Wow. I mean, it's bad. You ever? No, of course not. If you've ever been a pallbearer.
I have not.
Carrying, let's see, divided by, carrying like 38 pounds on your shoulder is not a big deal. Anybody who's moved house or like moved into college has done that. But when you're with five other people and it's a departed, dearly departed loved one, it suddenly becomes the most difficult task on earth to do. So I just imagine trying to pass, I assume like small bones, like hand bones or something like that between chopsticks is like, wow.
I know.
But I mean, they're all skilled users. They've been doing it since they were
little. But if they see somebody doing this at a restaurant, it reminds them of a funeral.
Sure, right.
So
that's the same way that, you know, when I bring in the tray from Buffalo Wild Wings and I've got five other guys with me, it's like, who had the volcano? And the I don't know. Sorry. You're like, I feel like I'm at a funeral here.
Oh, my God. All
right, sorry, continue.
So when passing food to someone else during a meal, which is generally not encouraged, one should pick up the food with one's own chopsticks, reversing the chopsticks to use the end, which has not directly been in your mouth.
Right.
And place it on a small plate, allowing the recipient to receive it with their chopsticks. So basically putting it on a clean, small
neutral
plate.
Ground.
And then they can pick it up.
Sure,
yes.
Sure.
Do not stick your chopsticks vertically in your rice, as this is also a practice that is done at funerals as an offering to the deceased.
Huh, yeah.
So, also a bad idea. Chopsticks not in use should be laid down in front of the meal with the tip to the left. So I didn't realize that that was that specific, but okay. With the tip to the left that your goes in your mouth.
Right.
This is also the correct position in which to place chopsticks after the meal's conclusion. Chopsticks should also not be placed directly on the table. It is common for restaurants to provide chopstick holders or hashioki. But if they do not, you can make your own, like you were saying, by folding the paper that comes in several times.
Hmm.
My family has hosted several exchange students from Japan when I was growing up. And one of them, I believe it was the our exchange student who was with us for an entire school year, showed us how to do this. And we thought it was so cool. And we're like, oh, my God. And I still try to, you know, do this to this day. But I think now
I've
that
trained them wrong on purpose as a joke.
No, it's not wrong. It's not wrong. It's just I guess I was supposed to put it back in the wrapper when I was done. But I think, you know, it was like her like way of like showing, well, we didn't get a chopstick holder, so I'll show them how to make it. It was like her trying to be like polite and sharing her culture
with us.
The Japanese
MacGyver.
Yeah, well. Chopsticks also signify whether you are still eating or are finished with your meal. Mm-hmm. Leaving chopsticks on the table will tell waiters that you are still eating. If you are finished, you should place your chopsticks together and sideways across a plate or bowl. And in general, do not play with your chopsticks. Do not pierce your food with them or point at other people with them, the latter of which is seen as a symbolic threat.
What?
Yeah. Like, I don't know, like I'm gonna eat you or I'm watching you. I don't know, but it seems I can see it seeming threatening. Like, yeah. You don't want to point a knife at
food
somebody.
Only.
Yeah.
You're not wrapping out Moby Dick with these things.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right.
And I mean, there's more, but that's
sure.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, basically being polite and courteous is the main thing. And don't play with your food. Don't play with your chopsticks. Just don't do it.
Common sense.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think so.
You know who else is big in Japan?
What?
Spinal Tap. That's all I got.
Come on.
Yeah, Budokan.
I'm gonna brute force this in there. Spinal Tap. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah.
Itadakimasu with Usagi. What did Usagi eat in this episode? So much.
Oh, boy.
So when Usagi and Shibuya run into Mamo-chan, among the list of things that Shibuya says she wants is donuts.
Right.
Which is another loan word, donatsu. Donuts. I just think of Homer Simpson. So fun fact. There is a popular donut chain restaurant in Japan called Mr. Donut.
Huh.
And
got a mascot.
Yeah. Well, and I've been there. It's you know, it's good. It's a franchise that was actually, this is the weird thing. It was actually founded in the United States.
Okay.
In 1956 by Harry Winokur. And the primary offerings include donuts, coffees, muffins, and pastries. After being acquired by Allied Domecq in 1990, most of the Northern American stores became Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, sure.
So outside of the United States, Mr. Donut maintains a presence in Japan, El Salvador, the Philippines, Thailand, Taiwan, Lagos, Ibadan, and Nigeria. As of 2016... Mr. Donut Japan had over, quote, 1,300 stores, making it the largest donut chain in the country.
Wow. And so, they're like Western donuts?
So they kind of have like their own like spin on them. So The guy who was the general manager and the director of food industries at the company that owns them in Japan, his name is Keiji Chiba. He adjusted the recipes and gave it kind of like a higher quality, higher class, like appeal image. Ooh. So the company would be successful in Japan, because prior to the introduction of Mr. Donut into Japan, a lot of Japanese people thought of donuts as being snacks for children. So
I can see it.
Yeah. Childish, it's immature.
They have a lot of interesting and rich food, but it's hard to see a Japanese salaryman just ripping into a bear claw.
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of fun things. They have stuff. They have stuff that's like matcha flavored. They'll have a lot of stuff that you'll actually, recognize, and it'll just seem Western. One thing that is really popular, I think they're called, and I'm not exactly 100% sure why. I think they're called, I can't remember. Sometimes they're called mochi donuts. They're not actually mochi, but they're like little circular. They're not donut holes. They're not that big. Huh. But they're little circles of donut that they push together and make a ring. So it kind of looks like a baby's teething ring, except in donut form. So those are really popular. So, taking the image of a donut and like making it fancy, turn it up a notch. Then the senshi go to the new cake shop called Maxi 5.
Yes. What?
What?
I don't know. I mean, there's five soldiers.
I guess.
I don't know what else
maximum,
to do with that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
This is what I thought was interesting. Like, if this was a Dark Kingdom plot, the restaurant Maxi 5 would be, Nephrite's idea or something like that.
Like Zoisite dressed like the Mr. Donut, the Dunkin' Donuts guy.
Yes.
Little paper hat.
Yes. Yeah. I can totally see it. Love it.
To make the donuts.
Throwing coffee at people. I don't know. It already exists, and they're doing a all-you-can-eat donut thing. And then Esmeralda's like, oh, this is where this is where the dark power is. This is where the spot is. So this is where it is.
Yeah. We didn't have to start this business.
Yeah. I know. All these people actually work here. And then it's just, we see a crowd of women swooning over cake. What are you trying to say? Show? Men like cake too. Why is it just women? It is all women.
Well, these are fancy cakes.
I guess.
These are tea cakes.
Yes. There is a lot of coffee as well at the cake shop. And I should mention that cake shops are very popular in Japan.
Yeah.
If you go, you will find a lot of different varieties of cake. A lot of single serving pieces of cake are pretty popular, as well as whole cakes. And we've talked about the shoto keiki before, the strawberry cake with the sponge cake and the whipped cream.
Yeah.
You'll find that in every cake shop in Japan, like all year round. I know they eat it for Christmas, but you will find that everywhere. There is a popular chain of cake shops in Tokyo called Ginza Cozy Corner. It was established in 1948, and they have a lot of seasonal desserts throughout the year, which I guess shouldn't be too surprising. That's probably a pretty common thing. One thing I thought was strange is everyone in the episode seems to be picking up the pieces of cake and eating them. Like, even like the girls who like are eating them politely at the table, they're not eating them with a fork.
Yeah.
I don't think this is what would actually happen. Even if they're like smaller pieces of cake, like if you were served like, let's say, a brownie sized piece of cake, like a tiny little square of cake, I think even in Japan, even with that smaller piece that like we call in the Midwest like a bar, I think they would eat it with a fork.
Yeah, I got the impression that they have things like this at Starbucks, like rich little, like mini torts or something like that.
I guess.
In paper, and then you just take it out. And I mean, you can use a fork if you want, or you probably just eat it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's interesting. Maybe it's tough to animate silverware.
Or like them eating.
Or maybe they didn't
want to
come down on silverware versus chopsticks or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they do have silverware in Japan. I think that maybe that's like a myth or something like that. People don't realize that they do use silverware every once in a while for certain things.
Well, they should use it for the funeral, because a spoon would be a lot easier to move a bone around.
Oh,
than...
my God.
Sorry,
stop.
Gotta let that go.
Wow. Wow. Villain gauge, we rate a baddie 1 to 5 dark stars, 5 being the most wicked. The droid in this episode is named Marzipan, which is pronounced Maruzepan in Japanese. She is named after the confection
Marzipan,
yes. Which, considering that she is working in a cake shop, works out pretty well. Marzipan consists mostly of sugar or honey and almond meal or ground almonds, and sometimes also contains almond oil or extract. So it's really common in a lot of sweets.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll find it like chocolate covered. It's common to see it like it's really moldable. So you'll see it like in like I see it as fruit a lot, like little tiny models of fruit.
Yeah.
But like sometimes they'll make cute little characters out of it.
Got a ton of almonds.
Yeah. Right. Sometimes I guess it goes over cake.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
That's common. So it'll cover a cake. I don't really like marzipan that much. I never really have. I think it's really
it's
cool
weird.
And yeah. It looks pretty, but I don't like the way it tastes.
There's so much of it, you know. It's the same thing with the cheesecake, where it's like, oh, this is what a flavor. A couple more gallons of this, okay.
Well, it's just like, do you like almonds and sugar? Then you'll like this.
You're in luck.
Yeah, but if you don't, that's all it is.
Yeah.
So there's not really a certain like texture to it, or yeah, I mean there is. It's squishy. For her character design, oh boy. So she's got pointy purple hair that is pre-Rick Sanchez, before he was a twinkle in Dan Harmon's eye.
You don't know where this came from.
Yeah, right? She has red eyes and a darker complexion.
So let's hold on. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
Yes, she does have this hair. She's got the eyes, but they're both like shiny and plastic in texture.
So you're
appearance.
Like their icing or something?
Like their icing, or like their you know, like cake toppers,
or
their molded sugar, you know, or,
yeah.
or fondant or something like that.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
Yeah, it isn't just that she has eyes that like glow red. They're just like lozenges, shiny lozenges.
Huh, I guess I didn't think about it like that. The hair I totally get.
Kind of Dragon Ball hair.
Yes, definitely. She has icing swirl shaped bikini cups.
I think that's like meringue, right?
It might be meringue.
Two big meringues.
Yeah.
On her boobs.
Yeah, but it looks like she has horned nipples.
Yeah, they're pretty pointy.
It's really unfortunate. I'm just so distracted by that. I that's all I stare at when I see her. I'm like, pointy, like, you know, nipples. It's weird. She has pink, perhaps marzipan flowers all over as her straps for her bikini top, as well as her belt and corsages on her wrists, and on her aqua and white striped leggings. She also has a bright yellow mini skirt and an aqua and white striped bow in the back and red heels. She has donut earrings and an aqua choker. And then,
She's got double corsages, too.
Yes.
wrist corsages.
Yes. And then, of course, like as you were saying, her arms changed into pastry bags filled with some sort of stiff, sugary icing that paralyzes you.
Yeah.
So
we tend to get a little nervous when characters have skin tone that's a little darker than a donut color.
Yes.
And so, you know, I it's okay for people that have dark skin. It's fine as long as we're not playing into some kind of racial trope.
Yeah.
Like we did with
The droid.
Avocadro or whatever.
Yes.
And I'll give you a good and I'll give you a bad. Let's do the bad first.
Okay.
Peas, then dessert.
Yeah, get it over with.
The bad is that this is very similar design to
Avocadro.
So
they get compared a lot online.
So if they are doing a thing, double shame on you for doing the thing again.
Yes.
The good side is that this is this is a very nice design. And since we're talking about cake, it's very possible that this is the chocolate of the cake.
It could be.
The cake is white outside, inside it's black. Think about that. I don't know. Don't think about that. But do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So like it's possible that it's just a color. It's just part of the design. But the fact that it's so similar to their tribal character from before, it makes me kind of go, oh.
It puts a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth.
A little little marzipan in your mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, you see, it is purple here in a lot of the images, but it's pretty close to blue as well.
Her hair?
Yeah.
It's pretty close to Rick Sanchez's color. Yeah, I do think that like what you were saying, like at least with this character, it's not like it doesn't appear to be a stereotype.
Yeah.
I mean, I do feel a little weird about it.
I always feel weird.
Just because it's so similar.
Yeah, I always feel weird working harder than a racist person would to figure out what it is. Because when you're like, okay, so what is this? At some point, you've gone farther than anybody else was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying there's ill intent. They make the banana character and it's like, well, you guys could have thought about that before you did that.
Yeah, you could have.
But this is like, how deep do we want to go? Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Uh-huh. I think it's okay.
Yeah.
So now we're at her rating.
Yeah.
Her design is on theme with this episode. Like, you could not get more on theme, I think. I mean, it's all about sweets. She hurls sweets at you. Then you turn into a giant sweet or get stuck to a giant sweet. Either way, it's bad. Again, kids, eating too many sweets is bad for you. For the most part, I think it's pretty fun and effective. But I do find her design a little unsettling. I don't know, the horn nipples. I just can't get over it. So I'm going to give her 3 out of 5 dark stars.
Well, we did it again. I'm going to give it a 3 as well. And I got a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Is this a droid that she had in the droid bank somewhere? Like, I think it's interesting that she discovers Earth desserts for the first time. And then creates a droid that's all based around confectionery.
Or is she like, wait, I have a perfect droid for this.
Yeah,
is that one?
Yeah. I don't know. I bought it at a droid garage sale and never thought I'd get to use it. But
this is perfect.
So like, I don't know what's going on there. Sometimes, you know, we rate them on fashion. We rate them on just overall feel. We rate them on their effectiveness. Very effective. And like, you know, I think, like I said, I think it's a pretty good look. I mean, you took the dessert thing and ran with it.
Yes, I did.
But this could get you through the challenge to appear next week. But that being said, the kind of icky feel about what's going on with the skin color.
Yeah.
And also, like, she doesn't really get to say anything.
She just says her name.
Yeah, I like it when they got personalities.
Yeah.
It does take the whole team to kind of take her down. I don't know. I'm going to stick with a 3 on this one.
Yeah.
When in doubt.
Yeah. Stick with your gut.
Yeah.
I did want to say a little bit more about Saphir, which I forgot to mention last episode. So I don't know if you can tell or not, but his hair is actually a navy blue as well, which matches his jacket. I do think it's crystals on his jacket. I've been thinking about it more, and I just think that that's what it is.
It probably is.
He.
I mean, Michael Jackson had a shiny jacket, too.
That's true. Right.
If that's what they're going for.
Right.
If he moonwalks, we know.
We got him.
They're all walking on the moon.
That's true.
The black moon.
Right. Right. I did want to mention, too, because maybe you noticed this, but he does not wear the black crystal earrings.
Hmm. I did not notice that.
That'll be important later.
But you don't see Esmeralda's half the time.
But she is wearing them.
But she does have them, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, interesting.
So, yeah, he is not wearing them. For Sabu or Dabu, where we talk about the most interesting differences between the sub and the dub, in the dub, the scene where Mamoru throws a dish at Marzipan was cut.
Okay.
Not surprising there. In the original, like most droids, Marzipan was only able to say her name and some slight variation on
Marzipan.
It. Yes. But in the dub, she was given actual dialogue. However, I do not know what it was. And I did want to mention her name in the dub, Marzipan. They didn't change it.
Makes sense.
Yeah. In the dub in this episode, Sailor Mercury called her attack by its original Japanese name, Shine Aqua Illusion, instead of the usual dub name, Mercury Ice Storm Blast, which, honestly, not an improvement. Yeah, but yeah. So, I do have one piece of trivia for this episode.
Cool.
On the back jacket of the English dub DVDs, this episode is titled, quote, Emerald Bakes Up Trouble.
That's all right.
Yeah. But when you play the episode, the correct dub name title is displayed. But that fake name
Somebody's just getting fancy?
Awesome. I don't know. I don't know if like somebody's just getting fancy or if they were like, oh, I really liked their title, and they're like, I'm going to sneak this in there.
She's coming out or whatever it is. No, it's like, yeah she's baking up trouble.
I know.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah. I mean, she doesn't actually do any baking.
No, she doesn't bake at all. Never.
No. No, she wouldn't. And so now we're up to our rating for this episode. I love that Usagi and Chibiusa are actually getting along at the beginning of this episode. And then Usagi immediately excuses herself when she sees Chibiusa and Mamoru together, even though they both seem like they wanted her to stay. And yeah. I think it shows a lot of growth for Chibiusa, a 6-year-old. She was like obsessed with Mamoru and she was very like jealous of Usagi having, you know, and now she's like, where is Usagi going? I wanted her to come along.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's great.
Yeah. We've talked about it before, but the continual playing of Chibi as her rival, like her romantic rival.
I know. I'm not a fan of that.
Start Googling baby fetish.
I'm not a fan of it. And it's in the manga too. It's strange. I can talk about it if you want to talk about it, or maybe we could save it for another time.
We'll save it.
Okay. All right. I love how excited Minako gets about the cake and how ridiculous Usagi and Esmeraud are about eating it. I also love the exchange with Esmeraud at the end. I mean, this is the filler episode, but I feel like it's fun, it's lighthearted. I mean not a whole lot. I guess we get the idea of when Esmeraud is
Anko Bean paste filler.
Yes.
No, this is the first we're firing off a whole new chapter here.
That's true. It's a whole new chapter and Esmeraud is telling us what is happening. I don't always feel like all of the little bits are really well connected, but that being said, I think all of the little bits are really fantastic. Yeah, like the scenes, I don't know. Sure. But so I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 roses because I think it's enjoyable.
It's like that pie.
Yeah.
The cherries.
Yes.
And the goop that the cherries are in.
It's a sugar, right? Yes. It's a maceration, yes, if you will.
Holds it all together.
Yes.
I'm going to go 5. 5 wow. out of 5 roses because this works and it works so well. It's so extreme. It's almost to the level of self-parody, but I'll take it. Do you know what I mean? You've got a unhinged Usagi who has completely erased all the growth that we saw last week.
Yeah, I know.
You've got a food-based plot. You've got the cats are doing bits.
Luna lets Artemis out of the basket case. That was great.
The villains are doing bits. Mm-hmm. They're doing bits with the heroes. Like, this is almost like making fun of Sailor Moon.
It is.
But at the same time, it works. It's entertaining. The stakes are set for a new thing. Going forward, Esmeraud did not disappoint.
Yes.
I'm going to love watching her for however long we get her. I think in 4 more episodes since there's 5 energy points or whatever. But we'll see.
Hopefully longer than that.
A little more information about, what's going on in the future. Bombshell information about what's going on in the future.
Yeah.
Some chibi stuff, some Mamoru stuff. This episode's got everything.
It does have everything.
I'd give it 5 out of 5 roses.
Okay. All right. So my English title is Esmeraud's Temptation. Momentary happiness.
Oh, God.
That's she was great. Enjoying herself.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can, draw her in like we did the Ayakashi,
Yeah.
Give up this plan. We'll give you all the cake we want.
Yeah. Demando isn't worth it.
Give you a lifetime pass to Caravelle ice cream. Bob Floy. We know the guy at Bob Floy. We'll hook you up.
Yeah, right. You could work at the cosmetic store with the Ayakashi.
Well, don't float that, but yeah. I struggled a lot. I didn't know exactly what to do or what to title this thing. So I had to just shoot out and do the best that I could. And what I came up with was, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away.
Oh, my God.
You should see your face.
I am just shaking my head. You cannot hear me shaking my head. That is such a bad joke.
And if it wasn't that, maybe cake a load off.
Oh, my God.
No, you're right.
Do you got another one?
Kick my life, please.
Oh, no! Next episode, we are talking about episode number 77. Omoi wa onaji, usagi to mamoru no ai futatabi in Japanese. Shared feelings, Usagi and Mamoru in love once again, the English translation, and the English title, Promises Fulfilled.
Promises Fulfilled.
Yeah.
A lot of promise in that title.
Yes.
We'll see if they're fulfilled or not.
We shall see.
It'll be reflected in the rating. If you want more of Sailor Noob goodness, you can always find us on social media at noob_sailor on Instagram,
and Twitter. Yes.
And then also, we are on a Discord. We've got a link to our Discord. Discord is a chat app. You know that.
Yes.
So come on in and chat with us about Sailor Moon and lots of different nerdy topics. Mm-hmm. And I should mention that we've got a Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/SailorNoob.
Mm-hmm.
None of that underscore business. It's all one word. And the reason I'm bringing it up is because on our next episode for subscribers
for
at
Patreon.
At the Inner Senshi level, we're talking about Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon.
Yes.
The live action series in our new segment called Pretty Guardian Sailor Noobs.
That's right.
Because we don't know nothing about it.
No,
neither of us.
Yeah. So it's plural. There's an S.
So we'll be watching it up and it'll be kind of similar to what we do on Sailor Noob, but not as long. And I don't think we'll go into such, extreme detail as we do, but it's more just, our impressions of it, maybe a little bit of trivia about the cast and, the production, particulars, but just having fun talking about Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon.
I do the
same
thing.
Moon. We're the noobs.
Saved it.
A master wouldn't do that mistake.
Only
a noob would. That's how you know it's real. So check us out, patreon.com/SailorNoob. If you want to join the show, join our crew, and listen to us talk about Pretty Guardian Sailor Moon.
I am so excited.
Yeah.
Well, that's our show for this week, and the name of the moon will be punishing you next week with another episode of Sailor Noob.
No, we're not doing it. It's down in.